Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Kat, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal stories describe in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight will listen later on aabluechipspeaker.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. And now, Jennifer is going to come up and introduce our lovely speaker tonight.
My name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. I've known Lindsay since I moved to Gainesville, Georgia, not Florida, Georgia, north, wherever that is, about 4 years ago. And Lindsay has been sober a while, but she shows up regularly and frequently to the meetings. And it's not even, my home group isn't even her home group, which comes a lot anyway. And that means a lot to me. There are certain people who come because they want a solution. I come because I want a solution, because I don't want to be crazy like I used to be. And Lindsay comes because she wants a solution. And sometimes we whine to each other, you know, but whining's allowed as long as we know that there's a solution at the end of it, that it's not just whining for, you know, ugh. And Lindsay doesn't whine, you know, in the negative kind of way. And I really enjoy her, and we're becoming good friends lately, and did socializing outside of AA. Ooh. And that's been a lot of fun, so I can't wait to hear what she has to say. Here's Lindsay.
All right. Wow, thanks, everybody. I'm going to put my little friend up here. He's my little friend. He's my frog. You know what frog stands for. We fully rely on God. So I take him whenever I'm asked to speak. And thank you, Tim, for asking me to speak tonight. It's an honor and a privilege. Wow. So I'm supposed to tell you what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And this is being recorded. Okay, and I'm supposed to keep it clean. That's a shame, because my story's really dirty. Really, really dirty. Okay, now that I have your attention, we'll move on. By the grace of God, AA, good sponsorship, I have not found it necessary to take a drink, a drug, or a hostage since January 25th of 98. And for that, I am eternally grateful. One day at a time, you know. You know, I was told that I have a disease that only a spiritual solution can be effective on. And I found that in these rooms. And I found that to be the only solution that works for me, is the spiritual part of this program. Anyway, a little bit about me. I grew up not far from here in Chambly. And, you know, I had a good childhood. There was no alcoholism or drug addiction in my family. My parents were good people. I have an older brother, went to Chambly High School, but I did a lot of drinking and partying around here. And but, you know, growing up, I just wanted to be Daddy's little girl, and he didn't have it to give me. And those perceptions that I grew up with formed the basis of my behavior as an adult. And I grew up feeling like I was invisible, that what my opinions didn't matter. You know, my father didn't have it to give. You know, he grew up, and I learned this through recovery. How my story is just my story. you know, and you hear just, we want the facts. They aren't facts. They're this, it's my story. It's my perception of what happened to me as I grew up. It is not, you know, as I work the steps, the truth reveals itself, you know, about me and about my story. But my story, my perception that I grew up as a child was that I had no worth. And my parents loved me. I knew that. But my father, he grew up in a very poor family in Middle Tennessee. And I think my grandfather, when he was young, he was a sharecropper on somebody else's farm. They didn't have electricity in their house till he was in the Navy. So, I mean, they were really poor. So when he was raising us, he thought love was giving us everything we needed, you know. Electricity and food on the table. That was love to him. You know, we never needed anything. But, you know, and he had all these apples to give me, but I wanted the oranges. That he never was given any oranges, so he had none to give me. But my perception, because of his behavior, you know, he wasn't available emotionally. He wasn't the kind of person who would bounce me on his knee, you know, or do things with me. And my perception of that was that I wasn't good enough, you know. I didn't deserve love. And my mom was a wonderful woman. She was probably more involved in our lives than my dad. But, you know, and then I was very independent from... You know, I think my family had a lot of our isms. You know, we never talked about stuff. We always put it, you know, if we ignore it, it will go away. Nobody talk about this now, you know. We don't talk about stuff like that. We just pretend like it's not there. And so I did not learn any communication skills at all growing up. So when I hit high school... Oh, Lord. You know, the hippie generation was emerging, and I found my niche with the hippies. And I loved it. You know, started smoking in the bathroom, smoking a little pot. And I'll tell you up front, my story does involve other substances other than alcohol. Big part of it does, so forgive me. Talk to your sponsor if you have a problem with that. I once heard I'd rather be a resentment than have one. So anyway, started, you know, getting in with a hippie crowd, and I was painfully shy. You know, I had no self-confidence at all. So, you know, it was easy to fall into a group that accepted me the way I was and was a little bit... radical, you know, a little rebel. I was a rebel, yeah. I was an independent rebel. And my mother was a substitute teacher at my high school. And she was there almost every day. And I remember one time I decided to skip a class, and she happened to be teaching that class. And I was out smoking somewhere, doing something. I never could get away with much, but I didn't date. I wanted to really bad, you know, but I was so shy, and I wasn't one of the popular girls. And I was 16. I was 16, and there was a Burger Chef restaurant near the high school, and this. We were, some friends of mine and I were there, and I was standing at the counter, and the night manager came over, and he looked at me, he was taking my order, he said, has anyone ever told you you have beautiful eyes? And at that moment began my first, you know, that became my first higher power, was approval from you. And men became my first addiction. And much to my parents' chagrin, I ended up dating and marrying that man who was, I was 17, he was 31. He had been married and divorced, had two kids, which I never met, but I ended up pregnant by him. And, you know, I knew I was doing the wrong thing when I married him. I flew to New York. Back then it was 72, and abortion was not legal here. So I had to fly to New York City. And my story, you know, I've never regretted doing that. I was 7 weeks, and I'm grateful that I decided not to have a child at that time. But I had to fly to New York City, and when I came back, I married him anyway. You know, I was afraid of hurting him. So that tells you something about, I have a lot of, forgive me, Al-Anon tendencies as well. You know, I'm an alcoholic, addict, Al-Anon, you name it. I've got it. So I married at a very young age, and, you know, I didn't know who I was. I just wanted to be accepted. I wanted that love, you know. And what that marriage lasted 2 years, maybe not even two. And we divorced when we divorced. We were living in Athens, Georgia, and all the stops came out then. You know, I was in a college town. I started partying really hard, and I was very promiscuous for years, you know, 20 years. And, you know, I was just looking for that one thing outside myself to fill that black hole. And I thought a man could. And, you know, I had these expectations on these men that they couldn't possibly fill, you know. They couldn't. They had no way of fixing me. And I thought they could. And so, really, you know, I don't want to spend a lot of time on my drunk log. We've all been to the depths of hell and back. You know, it doesn't matter what substance we used. I just remember... I was married into my third marriage by the time I was 42 when I got sober. And, you know, for years I had been looking for what we have here, you know. And I reached a bottom with methamphetamine, not the meth they have out there now. It was the speed, you know. I really reached the bottom with that, and I went to a few NA meetings, not far from here, in fact, and it just never clicked with me. And when I got into my third marriage, he didn't like me doing the drugs, so I quit doing the drugs and turned to alcohol. And, you know, that's what we had in common, drinking and sex. And, I started drinking really on a daily basis. And he told me I needed help. He said, "You need help." He said, "You drink too much." Like he didn't, but, you know, I was in my third marriage. I wanted to save my marriage. I thought, you know, God, another failed marriage. You know? But I always, you know, my picker's always been broken. I always seem to attract men who, you know, I saw their potential. You know, I could fix them, you know, or they were funny, but just not right, you know. So, something wrong. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous first time in, I think it was January 97. Came to a couple meetings. I picked up a white chip. And I thought, I'm not one of y'all. I'm just, you know, I can control this. And actually, No, that was the second time around. Let me go back. Okay, yeah. So I went back out and controlled it for a few weeks, you know, and then I was back drinking every day. And my marriage was falling apart, and my brother ended up writing me a letter, and a three-page letter, and I've always looked up to my brother. He's the one that always did the right thing. You know, went to law school, been a successful lawyer for years, and but you know, I never thought about the pressure that was on him growing up to do everything right, you know. But he wrote me a letter, and he said you're an alcoholic. He said, and he didn't really know anything about alcoholism. In this letter, I mean, it was divinely written, because he said, you know, you're an alcoholic. There are different forms of alcoholism, but you know, you're just practicing your variety. You know how our big book talks about the four different types of alcoholics. He said, you're just practicing your type. And he said, I love you no matter what, but you need help. And I love my brother very much. And that just got me. You know, I said, okay, I'm going to get help. So I went to the Gwinnett Room in Lawrenceville, picked up another white chip about a year later after my first one, and began this wonderful journey. And, you know, I learned that, you know, my perceptions as a child were not based in truth, you know, that my behavior had to change. You know, I was told that I have to start acting my way into right thinking. I couldn't think my way into right acting. That my thinking is my problem, how I think about things. You know, I heard a speaker once, you know, we love our acronyms, you know, KISS, keep it simple, sweetie. And his was, my problem is simply how I think. Yeah, it's true. It's simply how I think. And it's true. I realize that my thoughts are powerful things. You know, they're thoughts become actions. Actions, you know, create my reality. So I began this wonderful journey and started working those steps. And it's been a journey to... my recovery has been a journey to loving myself. Accepting myself for who I am, trying to be the kind of person God wants me to be. And you know, as long as I live in my life and not my head, I'm okay. You know, my thinking, my head is for entertainment purposes only. You know, I was told, do not go up here without adult supervision, you know. And that's true for me, you know. In my relationship with the God of my understanding, you know, I always believed in God, the higher power, what have you. But I always kept him in a little box, you know. And I'd take him out and play with him once in a while. Say, you know, when things got scary, you know, I would pray to him. But I had this yearning to really have a relationship with this God. You know, this higher power. I knew he was there. I always believed in God. And I found him a lot in nature. I'm a nature girl, and I love being outside, and I sensed his presence out in nature. And I've always longed for that closer relationship with him, but I never knew how to get it. You know? I've always been a seeker. And if that's one thing that's been on my side, it's that. I have always been a seeker. And before I got sober, I would read all these self-help books, psychology books, and they sounded so great, and they would work for a day or two, but then I wouldn't practice what they were talking about. So, you know, I'd go back into my old ways of thinking and old behavior, and, you know, it wouldn't do me any good. But this program has taught me how to practice that conscious contact. And, you know, when I know that we each have, you know, I can tell you about my experience with my God, but until you have your own, I mean, it's just a theory, really. And I was always told, you know, you will be contacted. You know, if I remain open and teachable, I will be contacted. And I will experience God in that way, whatever way He contacts me. And it never ceases to amaze me how He shows up in my life. You know, just by having a little bit of faith. You know, in our literature it says all it takes is that cracking that door open. That just that little bit is all it takes. You know, that faith of a mustard seed is all it takes. So I started cracking that door wider, opening it wider and wider. And man, I tell you, God has swooped into my life. I divorced my third husband when I was 2 years sober and have been single since and happy, you know. I've really been happy. I was in a 5-year relationship in recovery. And it gave me the opportunity to do things differently, you know. That relationship, unfortunately, did not work out, but I was able to address some issues that I had that I have had my entire life regarding Al-Anon, to be honest, our sister program, you know, and that helped me so much. But, you know, the 12 steps, it just in a different twist, but you know, some of my experiences, I have not strayed far from Alcoholics Anonymous in my 16 years. I'm afraid to, you know. I hear, thank God, I'm so grateful for the people who have gone back out there and made it back here alive to tell me about it. And they say it doesn't get any better. It's worse. It's worse than I ever thought possible. And that scares the crap out of me. And I've heard people with double-digit sobrieties that go out. And that terrifies me, you know. I don't ever want to lose what I've found here. But I know that, you know, my disease is out there doing push-ups. We've always heard that. And I know it is. It's out there doing push-ups, and the seed gets in my head. See, it starts right here. And it'll start saying, Lindsay, you don't need to go to as many meetings. I don't feel like calling my sponsor. I got all this stuff I need to do. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. You know, I didn't become an alcoholic overnight. So I'm eternally grateful to the people who have gone back out and made it back in here to tell me, don't do it, you know. I work with I sponsor quite a few women, and I love that. If you don't sponsor, you're missing out on so much. And I don't think I sponsored for the first few years I was recovering. Of course, we work on ourselves, you know, and that's what we need to do. But sponsoring keeps me in the middle of the steps. It keeps me teachable, you know. My sponsees teach me so much more than I could ever teach them. Because I'll have one that'll talk about an issue, and I'm like thinking, you know, I've got that issue too. I've got that problem too. Damn it. I got to look at it, you know. I got to, and that's how my God works. You know, he works through everybody that I come in contact with. You know, I'm learning from everybody. It might be what not to do. You know, God bless those people who teach me what not to do. I'm grateful for them. Everybody is a teacher for me. And you know, I can decide who I want to be around today. You know, I choose to be around people who are spiritually uplifting, who are on the same path as me. And I have to. I have to do that because certain people can be toxic in my life. You know? And I have the right to live a happy, serene, peaceful life. Safe. You know? So, you know, I had to learn, in loving myself, I had to learn how to set boundaries. God, when I got here, I had no boundaries. None. Whatsoever. And I learned that, you know, healthy boundaries are a good thing. You know, because if I don't have boundaries, I'm gonna get resentful. Because, damn it, you're not reading my mind. You should read my mind and know what I'm thinking and know what I need. You know? Jeez. That works. Yeah, that works. I used to have a sponsor who used to say, how's that working for you, Lindsay? Yeah, how's that working for you? Do it till you've had enough. So, you know, I had to get out of my comfort zone. Golly, I hated that. When I was early in recovery, you know, I'm kind of a recluse, or not so much. I really enjoy my own company, you know, and I can tend to have some social anxiety a little bit around people I don't know. So, naturally, when I was in early recovery, my sponsor would push me out into social situations that totally made me uncomfortable. And she said, you got to get out of your comfort zone. You know, and I didn't like that. I didn't like it. I said, but I'll do it because I'm willing to go to any length. So I got involved with a women's recovery workshop that they have two weekend retreats a year down at Rock Eagle in Eatonton. And that was the most spiritual growth that I have had. I mean, in early recovery, I decided to join the choir called the Step Sisters. And we sang at these. It was a blast. I mean, I can't carry a note in a bucket. I mean, people would run. People would, like, move. And I remember when I was in choir in high school, you know, people would, like, move away from me. I can't, you know. But that choir director, Lisa, would say, everybody can sing. And she was so encouraging. And I started feeling a part of. I never felt a part of anything. And I started getting out of my comfort zone and thinking, yeah, this is not too bad. This is not bad. You know, and I was cracking that door a little wider. And so I was living in Lawrenceville. I've got to tell you all this story. It's just so cool. I just love telling it. It's a God story. And I was living in Lawrenceville I was in that relationship that unfortunately didn't last, but we were living in my house in Lawrenceville, and I had a sponsor who had moved to an area of Huntsville, Alabama, and we had gone to visit her a few times, and we both loved the area, and he was in recovery too, and we started praying about moving to Huntsville, and it was in 08, and the market was horrible. And I said, well, let's put the house on the market. And I found a little cabin in Huntsville. I love log cabins. And the door started kind of opening for us to move there. And all of a sudden, they slammed shut. And I said, okay, God, well, my house was already on the market. And I said, well, why don't we just leave, see what God has in mind. And 2 weeks, my house sold for that asking price. I thought, oh, okay, cool, God, you got something planned. And the following weekend, I was going to go to my women's recovery workshop, and Richard was going to go out and do some process of elimination. I'm looking at houses, and something told me the lady who was my real estate agent had sent me a property of a log cabin. She knew I wanted a log cabin on the west side of Gainesville. And I called her and I said, I think we need to go look at that place tomorrow before I go away for the weekend. And she said, okay. She said, I was up at 2 a.m. this morning. I couldn't sleep. And there was another listing that popped up. She said, there are no pictures, but it sounds like something you'd like to. And I've been praying, okay, for a sign. Sign from God. And I'm not superstitious, but I knew God would give me a sign. I said, you know, when I find where I'm supposed to be. And we went and looked at this one log cabin, and it was nice. I mean, we both kind of liked it. And while we were there, he found a four-leaf clover in the yard, and I thought, well, that's cool. But then I looked over, and there was a horseshoe turned upside down against a building, and I thought, well, that's not right. And I just didn't really think about it. I just turned it right side up. So anyway, we left that place and went over to where I live now. Drive up this little driveway, and here sits this little dollhouse of a log cabin that is just amazing. And I get out of the car and start walking around, and I just start sobbing. And Debbie looks at me. She said, she knew I'd been praying about this. She said, Lindsay, if you don't buy this place, I'm buying it. I said, I don't think so. And we hadn't even gone inside. She elbows me and she said, well, now all Richard's got to do is find two four-leaf clovers. And at that precise moment, he bends down. He comes up with two four-leaf clovers. You know, and my God has a sense of humor. You know, I know I'm where I'm supposed to be. And everything involving the buying that place, I mean, it was like watching dominoes fall. Everything came together. And I know when I'm in the, you know, I used to wonder, you know, what is God's will for me? Well, I know that when I'm in God's will, things just flow. They just flow like a river. I don't have to resist. I don't have to force. They come together. And if I meet resistance, I adjust my sails. You know? You know, and I don't know, the spiritual aspect of this program is the aspect of this program. You know, for me. I mean, you know, the 12 steps, if practiced as a way of life, will give us the result that spiritual awakening is the result of working the program of action of the steps. And that is what I have experienced and continue to experience, you know. I love this program, but I don't take it for granted. You know, I know what I have to do every single day. You know, do I do it perfectly? Oh, hell no. You know, and I can use things to numb out on. I can use food, television. I would say sex, but it's been a long time.
Damn it.
Anyway.
Damn it.
But, you know, I can use anything. You know, and one thing I've learned, I think it was Chuck Chamberlain. He was incredible. He wrote a new pair of glasses. If you've not read it, it's a great reading. He may be paraphrasing him, but he said, in conscious contact with God, problems cannot exist. You know? My problems are when I am disconnected from God, when I'm experiencing conscious disconnection from God and from you. That's when my problems come in. But when I am in conscious contact with the God of my understanding, I don't have any problems. You know, my thinking around stuff changes. You know, that flat tire is an opportunity for someone to be of service to me. You know, good example, today's been a weird day. I have a pet sitting company. That's another dream come true that I've realized in sobriety. You know, I used to be in the corporate world and I hated it. In 08, I started a pet sitting company in Gainesville, Georgia. And it only took me 5 years for it to grow enough for me to actually live off the income. But, you know, God provided for me throughout that time. And damn, I totally forgot what I was going to say. Huh? Pet sitting, huh? Oh, yeah, today. What happened today? Yeah. It's been a weird day. Oh, look, a squirrel. No. I had a... been around dogs too much. You know, this morning I had a fairly new client whose cat got sick and I had to take him to the vet and they had to put him down. He had a lot wrong with him, and that's the first time that's happened, you know, and I felt really bad. The guy's on a sailboat headed to Bermuda, and his cat's here having to be put to sleep, and I felt really bad about that. But, you know, God's in charge, man, not me. And then I went to walk a little dog that I do. I walk Monday through Friday, and I walk into their house, and their house has been broken into. I mean, it's in a nice neighborhood, too. And, you know, and thank God the little dog was okay. But, you know, just strange stuff. And I thought, wow, I'm going to NABBA tonight to tell my story. I'm not nervous at all. You know, I was really looking forward to just being here with my people. You know, because you are my family. And if you told me 15 years ago I'd be doing this, I told you were out of your freaking mind. I can't stand up in front of people. But, you know, today it's not about me. It's about us. You know, we can do this. I can't do this alone. I need y'all. And, you know, my God speaks through me, through y'all, all the time. Through the newcomer that comes in off the street, I hear something I need to hear. From the old timer, it doesn't matter. Everybody's a teacher. Put on my little spectacles because I can't see anymore. I didn't need these when I first got here. But, you know, I have to, you know, what I have to bring to the table is my willingness to remain teachable. Because I've still got a lot of things wrong with me, y'all. I mean, I'm not where I need to be, and I'm so grateful that this is a practice. I get to practice this just for today. I get to practice a different way of acting. And my thinking will follow. You hear that? My thinking will follow. Yeah, they all hear that up here. Okay. Anyway, I throughout my recovery, I've gone to a lot of conferences, which I love. I love hearing other people's stories and speakers. I love Sandy Beach. He passed recently. God love him. He's the one that always said, "Drop the rock." But I just wanted to read a little something, and I'm going to close. And I hope y'all heard something that you can use. This is taken from a book. Alan Cohen is one of my favorite writers. And, you know, in our 11th and 12th step, the Alcoholics Anonymous encourages us to seek outside reading, spiritual writings, preferably non-conference approved, because it's better. and this is one taken from Alan Cohen's A Deep Breath of Life. And I just, you know what I talked about being in the flow. I know I'm in God's will when I'm in the flow. This is called Find the Stream. Most of us are familiar with the Star Wars maxim, may the force be with you. While the reasoning behind this good wish is sound, its language is not a completely accurate depiction of how the force works. The force is already with you. The question is, are you with the force? Imagine you are in the mountains and you want to get to the ocean as quickly and easily as possible. You know there is a river that can take you to your destination, and you set out to use it on your behalf. At the outset of your journey, someone says, may the stream be with you. This suggests that you will be walking wherever you want or choose, and you hope the water will leap out of the stream bed, find you, and carry it. This is not how the stream helps you. If you are going to harness the river's power, you must find it, get into it, flow with it, and let it carry you where both you and it are going. The river will not divert itself to follow the course you dictate for it, but it will become your best friend if you follow the direction in which it is already moving. There is indeed a mighty force animating the universe. It is one of well-being, health, prosperity, love, and all the good things you desire. The force is happy to take you where it is going and where you want to go. But you must get with it. If you wander far from the stream, it will not help you, nor will it come to your aid if you sit at a distance from it and do nothing. If you get into the river and fight your way upstream, you will not arrive at your destination either. There is only one way for the stream or the force to be with you. You must align yourself with it. Whether or not the force is with you is not a matter of luck. It is a matter of choice. And that is what I have today. I have a choice. The force is already with you, trying to work on your behalf. May you be with the force. And I love, you know, I've always, like I said, I've always been a seeker, and I've sought. I love different spiritual teachers. Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. Oh, he's one of my favorites. There's so many wonderful teachers out there. You know, keep seeking. Stay on this path of seeking, and God's going to swoop into your life like you wouldn't believe. You know, and He'll be very personal to you. You know, I saw a couple years ago, I was driving home and I was feeling a little down, and God's talking to me all the time, but you know, the question is, am I awake enough to see it, to hear it? And there was this little bumper, a square bumper sticker. How often do you see a square bumper sticker on the back of a car? It said, I heart LB, the initials LB, which are my initials. I was like, thank you, God, I love you too. You know, and He's got a great sense of humor. You know, but, you know, the question is not, is He talking to me? The question is, am I awake enough? Am I aware enough? Am I present enough to be hearing it, to be aware of it? So, you know, this present moment is all I have. And, you know, either God is everything or He's nothing. And today I choose that He is everything. And I seek Him on a daily basis. And when I do that, my thinking is different. It's weird. I mean, that's the mystery of this program. Am I going over? Yeah. That's the mystery of this program. You know, somebody heard a speaker say it's an utter simplicity encased in a mystery. You know, like letting go is easy. Letting God, we don't know how that works, but it does. Thanks, y'all. I love you.
sleep.